Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Welcome to the Revere Radio Network. It is the worldwide home of free speech. My name is Chris. This show is called Nowhere to Run, and I'm happy to be here with you guys. You can visit Revere Radio 24 hours a day and listen to the stream there. It has original programming and also some of the best programming from around the internet dealing with the conspiracy end of things. Again, that's revereradio.net. And just open the stream there. This show, Nowhere to Run, you can get at Revere. It airs every Wednesday night, I believe at 5 p.m. Central is when it starts and runs for 2 hours. Sometimes I'm in the chat room there when it is going, and sometimes I'm not. But you can also get this show in the archives, archive various places on the internet through iTunes and also through various podcast sites. You can also go to the home podcast site, which is nowheretorun.podomatic.com, where I try to provide some of the notes from the various things that we discuss throughout the course of the show. This show is going to be very interesting. I've got a lot of different things that I think we need to cover that's just incredibly interesting. Well, let me get just right into it. This is what I'm going to talk about right at the outset is some very, very interesting things that we need to know about. I guess it would be like an electronic declassified information about what they can actually do with basically mind control that can piggyback your television and radio waves, mind control that you can do little to nothing about, basically. And there's all kinds of very sophisticated stuff and also in some very insidious stuff. This is extremely real, and I'm going to be reading from a paper from Eleanor White, who is looks like she's some sort of very she's an activist against what she calls gang gang stalking and electronic harassment, which her whole bag is to prove that, you know, that if they don't like a particular person, and sometimes in a lot of cases when you know, there isn't a clear reason. There, a lot of people are being harassed through different things, which we've seen through Eldon Bird, and different people have proven that sometimes when people have voices in their heads, they literally have voices in their heads that can be proven with high-powered microphones and other things like that, through implants and other things. That is part of this, but not all of it. Let me read a quote here that's right at the outset of this paper that she presents. "We need a program of psychosurgery and political control of our society. The purpose is physical control of the mind. Everyone who deviates from the given norm can be surgically mutilated. The individual may think that the most important reality is his own existence, but this is only his personal point of view. This lacks historical perspective. Man does not have the right to develop his own mind. This kind of liberal orientation has great appeal. We must electrically control the brain. Someday armies and generals will be controlled by electrical stimulation of the brain." This was said by Dr. Jose Delgado. Dr. Jose Delgado, he was an MK Ultra experimenter who demonstrated a radio-controlled bull on CNN in 1985. He is also the director of neuropsychiatry at Yale University Medical School. And this was said on the Congressional Record, number 26, volume 118, February 24th, 1974. Let me read that last line again. "Man does not have the right to develop his own mind. This kind of liberal orientation has great appeal. We must electronically control the brain. Someday armies and generals will be controlled by electrical stimulation of the brain." it might be good to note here that we have just passed that all the troops will be getting chips in their brain, and these implants we'll be discussing here a little later, and it is part of this that we'll be discussing, but not all of it. And here it shows, I'll put this link to this website on nowheretorun.podomatic.com. It'll also show up in some of the podcast sites and other things. But I'll put it on there so you can see this little thing that he's got a picture of a monkey, which is actually as his brain is hardwired, and it's got the before and the hardwired picture. I mean, the before where the juice isn't turned on, and then when it is. And wow, you should see this. It's really, really something else. Monkey is in restraint. Wires coming out of the top of the skull. Left image normal. Right image with the electrical current being fed into the monkey's brain. Note pupil sizes and clenched teeth. These images portray Dr. Delgado's ruthless disregard for life, pain, and suffering. But more than just the monkey, having different pupil sizes in each eye and clenched teeth, you can see something very, very significant has changed there. Very interesting indeed. I am not concerned so much with what she is in this paper and trying to prove this. Basically, she's trying to show all these different types of electronic harassment, the things that can happen, sleep deprivation, fatigue, audible voices to the skull, different things like muscle triggering. All of a sudden your fingers will like move and like synchronization and all this stuff. But my concern isn't with that. It's really, in this paper, she also discusses some of the declassified stuff that they admit to have been doing with electronic mind control and the different aspects of it. Some of those, and the one that really jumps out at me right now, is what they can do with this. Basically, it's like silent hypnosis. What they do is they can modulate, like somebody basically saying a hypnosis, you know, Pavlovian trigger stuff, you know, like can have somebody basically a recorded hypnosis track, you know, like whatever it may be saying. And that could be that frequency, which would be somewhere in between the 300 hertz and 4,000 hertz varying modulation of the voice. And that would be mixed in with like a steady tone near the high end of the range, say 1,500 hertz. And that would be like a steady thing. They would be mixed together, and that, through frequency modulation, and I'm reading this from a diagram right now, and that output is more or less a steady tone, I guess it's pronounced tinnitus, which is, some people can hear as like some kind of noise, but they don't really pick it up as anything. But basically, what happens is, the big problem with the whole thing about most tones and frequencies is they're not supposed to be able to penetrate nerve cells, and so we're supposed to be sort of protected through that. But what can be penetrate nerve cells is these basic microwave pulses when there would be short bursts of this, and that's what is being happened to where basically they can piggyback this hypnosis stuff on a regular wave and then modulate that and then have it pulsed through microwave pulses piggybacked on basically TV or radio waves, whatever, and it will basically bypass your ears and go directly into your brain, and you would hear and understand it as somebody was just you wouldn't actually technically hear it, but your brain, it would totally bypass, and in doing so would totally bypass your, reasoning and what the whole idea of hypnosis is in the first place, is to break down that barrier to get directly into your subconscious, you can be suggested things without the burden of your conscious mind analyzing it and questioning it. And here, what they apparently were doing in 1974 is being able to hypnotize somebody without, like literally, hypnotize people through piggybacking on these radio waves. Let me just read some of the stuff associated with this, and I'm just going to be reading here. Let's see here. There's a lot here, so I'm probably just going to be skipping around. Frequencies that act as voice-to-skull carriers are not signal frequencies, as, for example, TV or cell phone channels are. Each sensitive frequency is actually a range or band of frequencies. A technology used to reduce both interference and detection is called spread spectrum. Spread spectrum signals have the carrier frequency hop around within a specific band. Unless a receiver knows the hop schedule in advance, there is virtually no chance of receiving or detecting a coherent readable signal. Spectrum analyzers used for detection are receivers with a screen. A spread spectrum signal received on a spectrum analyzer appears as just more static or noise. My organization was delighted to find the actual method of the first successful unclassified voice-to-skull experiment in 1974 by Dr. Joseph C. Sharp, then at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Dr. Sharp's basic method is known as in Appendix PM6 below, and I encourage you to check out these appendixes. They're very, very well referenced, all this stuff. A Frey-type audible pulse was transmitted every time the voice waveform passed down through the zero axis, a technique easily duplicated by ham radio operators who build their own equipment. A pattern seems to be repeated when the research could not be used for mind control. An unclassified researcher's loose funding, and in some cases their notes have been confiscated, and no further information on the research track is heard unless in the unclassified press. Pulse microwave voice-to-skull research is one such track. I'm going to read a quick thing about radio signals versus nerve cells. Ordinarily, radio and TV signals use a smooth waveform called a sine wave, shown below. This smooth sine wave signal cannot normally penetrate the voltage gradient across the nerve cell walls. Radar signals consist of very short and powerful pulses of sine wave signal. And these short pulses can penetrate the steep voltage gradient across the nerve cell walls. This was made public by GE scientists Alan H. Frey at Cornell University in 1962. NASA, Department of Defense, and EPA have published reports which declare that word communication by this method is an established technology. Differences in osmosis of ions, dissolved salt components, cause a small voltage difference across cell walls. When a small voltage appears across a very tiny distance, the change in voltage is called very steep. And this steep gradient is what keeps normal radio signals from throwing us into convulsion. The first unclassified successful transmission of human voice directly into the skull of a living person was performed by Dr. Joseph C. Sharp of the Walter Reed Army Institute in 1974 by converting the hypnotist's voice into the ultrasound range using a modified telephone voice changer. It is possible to hypnotize a target without the target being aware from hiding, leaving zero trace evidence. I'm going to read some of the appended articles that she has written, at least the summaries of these articles. PM1 is a photo and description of the old medical device, the Korean War vintage Lida machine, a radio frequency brain entrainment device developed by Soviet Russia as a drugless tranquilizer. Brain entrainment is included in the radio frequency section because the most insidious method of brain entrainment is to silently use radio signals. I encourage you to look into this. There's a letter here by Eldon Byrd, who I've mentioned in the past, who was talking about this machine that the Russians developed, and it's just, you know, they have a picture of this, or he has a picture, rather, of, you know, this machine on a podium, and all the people in the audience in Russia, you know, are out cold. Just really interesting stuff. But that's not the same, necessarily, technology that we're talking about, we were just talking about. It's just part of it. PM2, human auditory system response to modulated electronic energy. Nothing really there. PM3 is a NASA technical report stating that speech-to-skull is feasible. PM4 is Department of Defense Small Business Initiative project to study the unclassified use of voice-to-skull technology for military uses. The recipient, Science and Engineering Association, Albuquerque, New Mexico, would not provide any details on the telephone. PM5, excerpts from proceeding of joint symposium on interactions of electromagnetic waves with biological systems in the 22nd General Assembly of the International Union of Radio Science, August 25th and through September 2nd, 1987, Tel Aviv, Israel. Which shows the biological implication of electromagnetic signals pointing to the relative ease in which neuroelectromagnetic signals can trigger effects. PM6 is showing is an excerpt from Dr. Ron Judson of Neuropsychological Research, who describes Dr. Joseph C. Sharp's successful transmission of words via pulse rate modulated microwave transmitter. Okay, let me, before we go into some of the other applications, let me just say what's going on here. They can get my voice if I wanted to say, you are getting sleepy, very, very sleepy, on American Idol. You know, I could be telling you anything. Well, I guess they haven't really gone through that yet. That's another part of this. Let me say this again. This is a part about ultrasound and voice FM. Ultrasound is vibration of the air, a liquid or solid, above the upper limit of human hearing, which is roughly 15,000 hertz in adults. Voice FM uses a tone at or near that upper limit, and the speaker's voice varies the frequency slightly. Either a tinnitus-like sound or nothing is heard by the target. Ultrasound/voice FM can be transmitted in these ways. Directly through the air using airtight transducers, directly to the brain using a modulated microwave pulse train, or through the air by piggybacking an ultrasound message on top of commercial radio or television. Okay, that's harder to do. I was thinking, you know, reading about this. Here, let me just continue. The use of commercial radio or television requires that the input signal at the transmitter be relatively powerful, since radio and TV receivers are not designed to pass on ultrasound messages. However, the average radio and TV receiver does not simply stop ultrasound. Rather, the ability to pass ultrasound messages rolls off, i.e. decreases as the frequency is increased. Today's radios and TVs can carry enough ultrasound messages to be heard, quote-unquote, by the human brain, though not by the ear, to be effective in conveying hypnosis. This was proven by the U.S. military forces in the Gulf War. Ultrasounds and voice FM's main advantage in the mind electronic harassment, again, her points, work, is that it can carry verbal hypnosis, more potent than simple biorhythm entrainment, which is what that machine kind of does. The brain can hear, quote-unquote, and understand this, quote-unquote, inaudible voice, while the ear and conscious hearing cannot. Once you can convey hypnotic suggestion which cannot be consciously heard, you have eliminated a major barrier to the subject's acceptance of the words being transmitted. Well, yeah. In previous decades, the subliminal advertising using voice and image of normal frequencies were time-sliced into apparent normal radio or TV broadcasts. This apparently did not work well, and now voice FM subliminal learning tapes, commercially available, have superseded old-time slice messages. Let me interject here and suggest to you that hypnosis at least has the potential to be a negative spiritual thing as well. And I think that being at the level that hypnotic suggestion can get you to, and the things at that level, is a very dangerous thing to do. And when you're mixing in this these extremely low frequencies and stuff to access your brain and all this stuff, you know, you're dealing with stuff that is, you know, as we've discussed here, very, very interesting, to say the least. Okay, before moving on, I just want to also tell you about this. Okay, there's another way of getting this signal to your brain, and it's called the acoustic heterodyne, and it was developed and patented by an American company called American Technologies Corporation. And okay, so this thing is basically, let me try to describe it. It's two 200 kilohertz air-type ultrasound transducers. No audible sound emanates from them, but the one signal is pure 200 kilohertz sound, and the other signal is nominal 200 kilohertz, but is frequency modulated by a voice or other audible range input. It can also carry ultrasonic hypnosis, resulting in undetectable hypnotic effects. From all audible sound comes from the point of impact, which may be a living thing, person, bird, etc. but nothing until it gets there. Illustration showing the principle of ultrasound projection system capable of true ventriloquism at a distance by American Technologies Corporation's licensor Akai Japan licensee. And there's some appended articles about this. ITV Silent Sound Report with comments by Judy Wall, editor, Resonance Newsletter of Mensa's Bioelectronic Special Interest Group. An article by Judy Wall outlining instances of unclassified, openly admitted to electronic mind control operations by government agencies. An SBIR, which is Small Business Initiative contract, which clearly shows intent to use ultrasound as an anti-personnel weapon, including one-man portability with power to kill. A commercial New Zealand company, Altered States LTD, sells tapes which perform suggestions, i.e. hypnosis, but not called such, using the Lowery patent voice FM method to hypnotize without the subject being aware. This is a key feature of the neuroelectromagnetic involuntary experiments. A page originally from the MIT Media Lab's acoustic engineer Joseph Pompei, describes a similar technique under commercial and military development. American Technologies Corp. San Diego, under the trade name Hypersonic Sound, shows that sound can be focused to the extent of targeting just one person in a crowd acoustically using ultrasound. And there's a few other very interesting things that go on here as far as thought reading or just kind of being able to read thoughts kind of silently spoken to yourself. And like if you're reading something, it kind of even generates a signal to your vocal cords, even though it's not quite audible. What I want to get to is implants here. The electronic implants are actually one of the older forms of electronic mind control technology. Implants can either receive instructions via radio signals, passing them to the brain, or can be integrated via external radio signals to read brain activity at a distance. Implants are currently used, however, many of our group have had no surgery, unexplained wounds, or missing time since becoming targets, and we suspect that both implant and non-implant technology may be in use. Implants are significant for these reasons. Their use since World War II and continuing to the present day associated with MKUltra atrocities is a crystal clear indication that the motive pool of unethical researchers has existed through the late 1970s. The same people, none jailed and still working by and large. The reader can see that the existence of the same motive pool is overwhelmingly likely given that no social changes have occurred which would prevent that. The fact that, to date, autumn 1999, no victim who has had implants removed has ever been able to get custody of the removed implant shows that research programmers using the implants are still quite active and obviously quite important to someone. Implants, even though not in the hands of the victims, were photographed, blah, 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 blah. What do I want to get into here? The appended articles referring to this are important, I think. Article showing that human implantation is being done and even encouraged by U.S. NIH, which is the National Institute of Health. While this public information is for public good, it is a small step to move from publicly known and voluntary implantation to concealed implantation for involuntary and criminal purposes. Let's see. They also have a testimonial by an Italian. This is interesting, or very interesting. This is a testimonial by an Italian psychiatrist who has been assisting involuntary experimentees. This doctor began by assisting satanic or other ritual abuse victims, apparently involved. Involuntary brain implantation is alive and well in Italy. Why not elsewhere? They also have a project abstract by AF awarded to perform unclassified research and development of human implants, which can also read both. Okay, look, a lot of people have done a lot of good work on these implants today. Again, this was in 1999, so we know here in 2007 that they're putting chips in brains of the soldiers shortly after we've admitted that the chips in the arms that we were doing with Verichip were causing cancer. Okay, so why are these chips causing cancer? That suggests to me that they're doing something that is not what their stated goal is, because they're just supposed to be little benign readers, right? They just have little benign information on them. They just read them. Shouldn't be emitting anything. I mean, and to say, I think the public idea of why they're going to be implanting chips into our soldiers' brains is that we will be able to read their vital signs and know their location, et cetera, all for their benefit. Yeah, right. I mean, here in 1985, we were able to control bulls. I think we're, you know, Frank Lordy and his show has done a lot of work on the chips and what they can do, and this is really interesting stuff as far as that's concerned. I guess my main point in this was to point out the whole idea of this hypnosis being carried on our radio and all the radio waves, and we're just polluted with this thing. I have a very fishy feeling about all these cell phone towers everywhere, this grid that has been put up around us. I think that they also are used for cell phones. I don't see why they wouldn't be. I mean, obviously we have cell phone signals everywhere we go, but these things are everywhere, and I know that they're running off an extremely low frequency bandwidth, and as I've stated before here, that makes me very suspicious, considering that, you know, that ELF frequency is what our bodies are attuned to, and it's apparently very important for a lot of reasons, but you know, it also scares me when you look at Frank Lordy's work and you look at all the stuff that he's uncovered about how these ELF waves are very synonymous with, like, the paranormal, and how that's, you know, all seems to be tied together. And if you're going to go buy an ELF meter, then you're going to have to buy it under the pretext of, oh, you're a ghost hunter. You know, because apparently if you come in contact with a real ghost, these ELF meters go crazy. And as, you know, listeners of this show may or may not have an idea that these ghosts may be nothing more than demonic entities in some way or another. And so here we're surrounded by the same waves that have at least nominally something to do with the demonic realm. I think that is interesting. I think that it also should give you a good enough reason not to watch TV anymore and to try to get off all any kind of this stuff. Because, I mean, if here we're showing you that it was at least highly regarded and very much in use and intended to be used more, that just basic hypnosis would be suggested to you, and literally a tape of somebody giving you hypnotic suggestion might as well be intertwined with every single band that we get, and no spectral analyzer can detect it unless they know the jump rate or jump signal or whatever it was. So, you know, that's a good enough reason to be very distrustful, both of your kids and everybody else sitting in front of the TV. We should have turned the damn thing off a long time ago anyway. I mean, it is nothing, there's nothing for you on that TV. There's way too much going on for you to sit and get sucked into that thing, man. It's that thing that's caused so much trouble. I mean, it's crazy. We gotta get off the TV diet and start living life, because there's not much of it left to live. You know, we've got to go do something, and we can't. I mean, and here, you know, I mean, the flicker rate and all that's important too. I'm sure that they're just doing everything they can, not to mention just the general brainwashing and propaganda and everything else. It's just crazy. We just need to turn it off. Well, let me. I kind of on the same subject, but a little bit not. I just wanted to get that out of the way. I've just been looking at that today, so I'll jump off of that right now and go into something I've been thinking about. Okay, we had Frank Lordy on from SalvationRevelation.com not too long ago, and we had a very interesting discussion, and he has put together an incredibly well-referenced theory and paper on what could be under the Great Pyramid of Giza and what its function may have been, and how it fits biblically into being a potential location of the abyss, or one of the abysses described in the Bible. He goes into various things that are at play here that we're concerned about, like the extremely low frequency that is ELF connection, and with all this, and that is basically that the pyramid itself appears to have a lot of acoustic properties that are tuned like a instrument or something to this this extremely low frequency band, and that's suggested a lot of times by people like Christopher Dunn in his book Giza Power Plant. where he discusses these properties and discusses that it may be like the Earth frequency itself, because the Earth operates on these ELF waves. Our primary concern right now is to do with the frequencies resonated by this, and more interestingly, the sarcophagus, the granite sarcophagus, which is in itself a sort of an anomaly in that you can't really create. That's a solid piece of granite, and in order to create that that hollowed out cavity in it, you would need a diamond tip drill and several thousand tons of pressure in order to create that. And it's obviously not the ancient Egyptians weren't supposed to have any kind of presses that could do that. But in any case, it resonates it rings like a bell if you strike it, and it's become kind of a novelty. But what makes it all the more interesting, if you know much about the pyramid and know that the idea that it was a tomb or that is a sarcophagus in any way is kind of ridiculous, especially considering anything in the Old or New Kingdoms in Egypt is just totally inconsistent with a tomb. It's kind of more just the false history of Egypt, really, is that pyramid has anything to do with that time or any time period in Egypt. It's just an interesting thing, but basically my point here is that I've got a number of points, and I just want you to kind of stay with me here a little bit. The interesting part that I thought that was thrown into the fray here is when, you know, considering this may be one of the abyss, and the abyss in the Bible isn't hell necessarily, it just seems to be a place in which some of the angels, specifically some of the fallen angels, the B'nai HaElohim, that got originally busted, disrobed from their original habitation, and actually were the ones that created the offspring of the Nephilim. They were sort of put in this abyss that will only be opened here in the last days, and they will. There's a king among them called Abaddon, and he is also in the abyss that will be released here in these last days. So it's not necessarily hell, and it seems like there might be more than one. But kind of getting off the point. It really gets interesting when you throw in this Book of Thoth, which is pretty much considered to be sort of an occult document. A lot of New Ager types reference it in a lot of ways, because it speaks of this guy Thoth or Hermes, which is he refers to himself as Atlantean and all this stuff. The interesting part and the reason that we're talking about it is because he describes a process that, and he's describing apparently a process of two different frequencies, both a high and a low, modulated, that would cause the person that would choose to lay in this sarcophagus, that would cause them to be induced into an astral or out-of-body experience or whatever. So somehow these two frequencies will cause an out-of-body experience, and at which time you would go to do certain things, but the end result would be to have some sort of meeting or communion with this entity, this extremely dark, enthroned entity, apparently underneath the pyramid. And some think that the pyramid was built on top of a very, very ancient site. And anyway, what's interesting about this is something that happened recently, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because, well, obviously the Masonic folks revere the pyramid more than just about any other thing. The New World Order is focused on it more than just about anything. It's kind of the thing to do with the New World Order. And if you understand that they are Satanists in a very real sense, and that the higher level people are indwelt with demons that are under orders to pave a way for the return of the Antichrist, or the, not the return, but the advent of the Antichrist. And he would, so that's their goal. They want this phoenix to rise out of the ashes of this just absolute destruction of World War III, and then he will come to be the problem, the solution to the problem and the reaction that great and bloody war that we're about to go in will be passed off as Armageddon, when in fact it will be something other than a precursor to it, but be passed off as biblical prophecy, so that he may be the Mahdi for the Muslims, which is, if you read their eschatology of what the Muslims are looking for, and you read what their Messiah, if you will, sounds like, he is exactly like, reads exactly like like the Antichrist. So if the biblical Antichrist looks and sounds and acts anything like the Bible says he will, then the Muslim people will hands down agree he is their savior, which is odd, and I feel orchestrated by the devil himself. And I've only recently kind of put two and two together, thanks to Russ Dizdar, that Allah may in fact be one of these territorial demon gods that are very clear in the Bible, that they're territorial, they're the princes of certain areas, as the Bible often, when it refers to princes, oftentimes is referring to a territorial demon god. And it does appear that while they have more power than your average demon, the ranking system still applies, much like the military, and they would be under the orders of their superior, in this case Satan, or if there is something of a higher level between them and Satan. But my point is that they would be still doing Satan himself's agenda. My point, the reason I'm bringing this up, is because of something Freeman has done. I was listening to a recent radio program that he does. Freeman is a radio host here on the Revere Radio Network. He also does a public access show in Austin, Texas, and has a lot of videos on Google Video and whatnot. The reason that I'm bringing him up is because it's something that he's been looking into recently that very closely parallels all this. Now, just for the record, I like Freeman. I think he's a great guy, but he's been getting, in my opinion, a little darker lately. And, and again, it's my opinion, but I think that there are two very different forces at work in our lives and are driving why we may both be actually supernaturally driven. I think that the nature of the forces are very different. But I think it's very interesting that we are coming to the same conclusions from different angles. And in the clip I'm about to play, he is talking about various synchronicities that happened to him in his course of going to this ESO zone, this kind of conference type thing, and running into people that were studying the exact same things that we're talking about here, the frequency modulation of stones and the reverence of that by the Masons and the different machines that are being built. What I find interesting here is that he has run into a priest of the Church of Satan who I don't think goes into this clip, but this guy who is obviously, he speaks of the old ones. And I'm kind of setting up the clip because Freeman just kind of barely mentions this. But the Rex Church guy, the priest of this Church of Satan who he runs into here that he talks about, and he also understands apparently this idea of frequency modulation of stones and the Masonic thing and whatnot. And he is, in fact, I don't know in what level or what it is, but he's building something or trying to build something that would be a portal to the old ones using this same technology, which is, of course, interesting to me considering what I think the pyramid is as a frequency-modulated thing to do whatever it is, whatever we can go around the specifics, but it definitely has something to do with the same kind of energy that would be associated with high-level demonic forces. So let me play this clip, and I'll explain what I'm saying after that.
I'm giving my talk, and I'm discussing, of course, the device that William Henry talked with me about out in front of the Nashville Capitol. I did get into HARP and some other of the geomantic devices, and just the ideas of masonry being used as frequency modulation. And as I get to the halfway point, I've got a little video clip that I play, which I call Got Trauma, which is all about the trauma that was being projected into us to alter our mind programming and accept this craziness as a valid reality. So, of course, this includes the teen sport killings of the homeless, the Anna Nicole story, the Britney story, the Virginia Tech story, all of these programs that were being placed into our minds so that our collective mind programming will instill the fear and the chaoticness of, or the chaos of all of this. Not to mention the America's top models putting out spreads of murdered models and all those things. And they're in my new Anna Nicole video, which I haven't put on Google yet. So I go to play this little 11-minute video clip, and as I'm running out of the offstage to go just take a breath and relax before the second half of my speech, as I'm running out, I see Rex Church, who is one of the priests of the Church of Satan. Now, he's in my video presentation, and none of us had any idea that he was going to be there. But I'm looking at him as I'm running by, as I'm heading out the bar where this presentation was being given, and I see him standing there, and I'm thinking to myself, is that the guy from my video? And I didn't give it any more thought, because I knew I only had 10 minutes to just kind of go out there and just stand there for a sec. And I come back in, I finish up my lecture, and then Rex Church comes to me and says, well, you know, I want to tell you that you gave this the best presentation, and thank you very much for promoting me. I will be discussing those very topics that you showed me talking about in your video presentation, which was aesthetic terrorism and the use of propaganda. Now, this guy is an ex-Psy warfare agent or operative for the military, so he's very familiar with this. And of course, then he got into a whole discussion of the same thing, the use of masonry for the psychological warfare, and also the use of phi ratio and whatnot into to create the frequency modulation desired by the Masons. And so here's a guy, you know, I confirm his work, he confirms my work, and I'm just astounded by it all. So once again, what are the odds? Then Paul Laffoley gets up on the next day, and he starts talking, and well, lo and behold, he is discussing the very same topics, because, well, these are the type of things that he creates, are these geomantic machines. Now, Paul Laffoley is a utopist. He is not seeking to create something to open portals for the old ones to enter, but to design things to make human life just amazing.
And I think the significant part to look at here is the reference to Rex Church, who a priest of the Church of Satan, working on this frequency modulation of the stones for the use as a portal for the old ones. And I think that is significant. So let us look for a dictionary definition of the old ones from Arizona Wilder. Again, take this next clip with a grain of salt. I think that she is many sleeping programs is heavily deceived in a few areas that we've covered here numerous times. But let's hear her talk about these old ones.
The second thing is that during the rituals, you had to have psychic ability. You have to be very powerful in that way to call out the old ones that are also reptilian, that come from another dimension. They actually they materialize from out of another dimension and are present at rituals, and they are so powerful, and their presence is there's such an evilness about them, and they want out of this other dimension, and they can't, they have to be called out by someone who has that power, and the reptilians don't have this power. That's very important, that they don't have this power to call out these old ones that have to do with them. And
what is it that humans have that the reptilians don't have, that means they don't have the power to connect interdimensionally, and some humans do?
We have the ability to foresee, to be able to become vibrationally higher, and see into those levels, go into those levels, and in fact, agencies use this, they call it remote viewing, to go, that people, these humans have the ability to go into the past, to go into the future, to go to other places, to astrally leave their body, astrally, and to see things and we've always had this ability, and it's like having the third eye, which they don't have. They don't have this ability. So these, during ritual, these old ones are called out, and they are what Christianity would have called the demons. They are called out, and they, there is a circle that is, it has a hexagon in there, which is a powerful occultic symbol, and then there is a pentagram, and then there in the middle of that there is a triangle, and if you're the one calling them out, and you stand in the triangle so that you're not devoured or taken by these creatures that come out.
That creates an energy field around you, which they can't penetrate.
They can't penetrate it, and they cannot get outside the pentagram. And they want out. They're always demanding to be let out. And so you have to be very powerful to keep them in line and to make them go back when it is time for them to go back.
Why do the reptilians want to manifest these quote demons at the rituals?
It brings power to the rituals. It brings power to them. They are told things by these entities, and they are encouraged to go on with what they're doing. And knowledge is imparted to them through these entities. But it takes a person with the ability to bring them out and make them answer, because they don't want to cooperate. They have to cooperate when the right person has control over them.
And that's to do with that person's energy and ability to use
it. Right,
energy.
Yes.
Okay, bear with me on that. I know that there is a lot of deception in that last clip, and I think that both because of her seeing the world through a glass darkly, of her extreme amounts of trauma-based mind control, and the training sessions for her telling her what she has seen for so many years and when she would be conducting these rituals plays a huge role in what she is telling David Icke in that interview. In addition, I think that she is deceived in a basic manner of pride that she was special, and that was driven home in a lot in her, when in fact I think a lot of those psychic abilities that she described were the types of psychic abilities that people have when they have been given a demonic attachment, which one could do just by dabbling in some occult things. But my point, and the reason that I played that clip, was because it shows that the old ones that she's describing here, and which is oftentimes overlooked when describing this testimony, is what she... Apparently they are the point of the ritual, is to get these old ones to come out of their imprisonment or something. That's the important part of this, is that the old ones are somewhere that they have to have a direct intervention to come out of, and they don't want to go back to where they are at. And I think that parallels also with what we discussed with Russ Dizdar in our interview with him, who has done hundreds of exorcisms, or what does he call them, deliverance sessions. And during these deliverance sessions, basically you can command these demons to speak in the name and authority of Jesus Christ. They pretty much got to do anything you tell them to, and they don't really like that very much, as you can imagine. But at the time when you were going to actually cast the demons out, it apparently, if you give them a choice of different places sometimes of where they want to go, but some of the most dreaded and hated and feared things of places for them to go is the abyss. For whatever that's worth, whatever happens to them in the abyss, I think that he's mentioned in a few podcasts, kind of gone into that in a little bit of detail, but I think it parallels to this to some extent, that it just kind of gives you more of an idea of the how this whole system is working. And so for had to have this Rex Church character claiming to make a portal for the old ones fits right along with that testimony of the old ones in this high-level satanic ritual. Okay, we'll kind of move on to another subject, but I think that that's important because, you know, if you take all that together, it looks like there is, well, I don't know, you look at this grid that's being built up around us with all these ELF frequency towers and all this just bombardment from electromagnetic frequency and all this stuff that's all around us and HARP and all the rest of it, you know, and when those very things are associated, apparently, with the demonic realm and its physical characteristics as per, like, existing in another dimension, and somehow it relates. I mean, I think that that is enough concern to just be talking about it, so that's why I guess I'm doing it. But it also, you know, it ties into the chip, you know, whatever, whenever and whatever this chip happens, I think it's going to be significant because I think it has to do with demonic attachment, and I think that that is the purpose for it. Whether or not the chip emits some sort of something that makes it easier for a demon to attach you without the normal course of events. But then again, the normal course of events are simply just being at the right place and receiving a demon by your free will. I mean, you could do it yourself if you wanted to tonight, most likely, just by your free will. And so I think that by giving that away, by pledging your allegiance to the person behind the chip, you could do that as well. I don't know. Anyway, moving on, let me go to this. It's pretty funny. This is from when I was just concerned about cell phones and their health effects, and I was wondering about extremely low frequency radiation is associated with it. And I found this fact sheet from the CDC. This is from the Department of Health and Human Services, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 1995. It is frequently asked questions about your cell phones and your health. This is the fact sheet. This is the official rag. This official version of events about cell phones and their health effects. So you'd expect it to be kind of a whitewash. Oh, don't go back. There's nothing wrong with cell phones. Go back to sleep. All right, what are you, stupid? Anyway, so it goes on. And what is ELF? What is RF? And what is ionizing radiation? Blah, blah, blah. And then it asks the question, does using a cell phone cause health problems? Can using one cause cancer? This is their answer. The possible health effects of RF radiation have been studied for many decades, mostly in laboratory research with animals or cell samples. Most of these studies did not consider the types of exposure people experience when using cell phones because that technology did not exist. Okay, let me translate that little blurb for you. We've never done a study on it, so we have no freaking clue. Okay, let me read that again and see if my translation is accurate. Okay, the possible health of does using a cell phone cause health problems? Can using one cause cancer? The possible health effects of RF radiation have been studied for many decades, mostly in a laboratory research with animals or cell samples. Most of these studies did not consider the types of exposure people experience when using cell phones because that technology did not exist. I mean, that's like saying, oh, well, do cell phones cause cancer? Like, well, we've done a lot of studies on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we found that they were pretty good, and well, that didn't really have much to do with cell phones, though, because that technology did not exist at the time. So no, we have no freaking clue if that has anything to do with it. But it continues here, and it says, in the last 10 years, hundreds of new research studies have been done to more directly study possible effects of cell phone use. And it says, although some studies have raised concerns, okay, that's frightening as hell, considering they wouldn't even mention it if they didn't have to. So then they say, although some studies have raised concerns, the scientific research, that sounds good, when taken together, okay, that's when you take all the scientific research together, it does not indicate a significant association between cell phone use and health effects. Okay, that's a little blatant legalese going on there. So let me read that last part, and it's just a little concerning by the way they word that, like a lawyer put that last sentence together, and this is so, okay, although some studies have raised concerns, the scientific research, when taken together, does not indicate a significant association between cell phone use and health effects. Well, I wanted to know about the studies that did raise concerns. I mean, what? But if we take it together, if you take, I mean, what the hell is that? That's really stupid. And then it goes on, the last paragraph here. Since the public continues to be concerned, well, yeah, because everybody's got one, there are ongoing studies being conducted by many researchers, including the World Health Organization. In addition to investigating the association of cell phone use and cancer, other health effects are being studied, including effects on the eyes, sleep, and memory problems, and headaches. The study results should be completed in the next 3 to 4 years and can be accessed at the following website, www.hwo.int, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so when you hear people say, oh, cell phones are safe, blah, 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 obviously the official version of events is that we have no clue, and that maybe in the next 3 to 4 years we'll know something, but right now the studies look, you know, they do raise concerns. But, you know, when the scientific research is taken together, it does not indicate a significant association between cell phone use and health effects. Okay? People, this is dangerous stuff we're doing. And it's just like everything else. It's like the silico fluorides or whatever in our water. You know, everybody's coming up with this peer-reviewed research data that sodium fluoride and the different and calcium fluoride are causing all these major health effects and problems of reproduction, this thyroid gland, and just huge problems are being associated with fluoride because, you know, a lot of peer-reviewed independent research has been done lately. But it just goes to show you that the stuff that we've actually put in our water, silico fluorides, this hexafluorosilic acid, that stuff has never had a test done on it on a human before. The actual stuff that they put in our water is given, it's an alternative to like your water district guy who's doing the actual purchasing of either sodium fluoride or whatever, or the hexafluoric acid. He gets an alternative because it's been approved, so he can buy this cheap alternative, which is literally a byproduct of the phosphate industries of China and Florida and Louisiana, is shipped directly from the factories as an absolute toxic waste that corrodes glass, that has no industrial use. It's a byproduct of making steel, aluminum, and fertilizer, phosphate stuff, actually. So it's a byproduct that corrodes glass and is absolutely totally dangerous. They've never done a study, although it is the most requested chemical to be researched by, I think it's the Toxicology Center for, it's the CDC's toxicology wing, I think. Every year they let the public benevolently choose a chemical to have a toxicology report done on it, and of course they would request something that is in 80% of the water districts in America, and we are drinking up diligently. But again, there has been no long-term tests. Same thing with genetically modified food. No long-term tests. Hey, I wonder if this... It seems to be, the initial data seems to be messing with our chromosomes. Our corn is messing with our chromosomes and really making us, putting us in extreme danger because, of course, no long-term effects have ever been done on it. I mean, this is madness. It's madness. I mean, it's one thing to, like, you know... I don't know, try to eat, like, hey, I think I'm going to try to eat squirrel or beaver or something that's not really been eaten, you know. But it's another thing to just to mix jellyfish genes with corn and then eat it, and then, or clone a cow and then eat it and think, oh, it's good. I'm sure we'll get some tests in the next 3 or 4 years to see whether this is a good thing or not. Oh, especially, let me just rant about the genetically modified thing for a while. Nobody else in the rest of the world will eat it, okay? It's only America and Canada because they won't tell us what it's in. But nowhere else in the whole world will eat it. Like, China has a market and makes it and modifies it for us, for the American market. But they won't eat it. They won't feed it to their people. Because, the initial tests on it show it to be extremely dangerous, okay? And the best we can hope for is to try to jump off that whole grid. I mean, the best we can hope for is to kind of have an idea what is being genetically modified and avoid it like it was the plague, literally, like it was the plague, because it might be the plague. And just a few helpful hints. I mean, anything with corn right now, unless you know that it's organic and it says organic on it, is as a very high probability of being genetically modified. And that includes every Coke you drink that has, they've phased out sugar somehow and they've replaced it with high fructose corn syrup, which in and of itself, I mean, just because it's made with corn is potentially genetically modified. But in order to make those enzymes the way they do, they have to go through a process which is, in effect, genetically modifying it. And they've phased out sugar in place of this possibly extremely deadly and dangerous chemical. So anything with Cokes, I'm from the South, so I call everything Cokes, but you know what I'm saying. All that soda stuff and basically every juice, if you're buying juice, make sure it doesn't say high fructose corn syrup on it. Try to find 100% juice. Oh, it's such a crazy idea. But, you know, and then you got to watch out for rice. I know that some rice, most of the rice in Middle America has been contaminated now because this the way genetically modified stuff works is that it spreads to the neighboring farms. It's basically unstoppable, and once it's started, so eventually it will all be genetically modified just at some point, but unless we can genetically modify it back to its original state, which is, you know, probably not going to happen. Anyway, so I know that some of the California rice claims to be not genetically modified, and I don't know about the stuff over there. I know that they were originally claiming that everybody needed so much food, and that's why they were doing it, so everybody's swimming in rice over there in other countries. But anyway, I think Uncle Ben's is from California, or at least it's distributed out of California, so that's a possibility. Other things to watch out for. Squash, yellow squash, I know that they're pretty much always genetically modified. They say potatoes aren't, but they were at one time, and I don't know, I guess they're clean now, I don't know, but I still would be a little wary of them and try to get organic whenever possible. Also, anything that says canola oil or cottonseed oil, cotton is all genetically modified, and canola oil is supposed to be like healthy, but it's all genetically modified now. So you got to read the backs of the labels. I was like, cotton? I was like, there's no way I'm going to eat any cotton. But then sure enough, I was eating some chips the other day. I was like, hey, look, these chips don't have MSG and whatever in it. I'm like so happy. I was reading the label and it had cottonseed oil in it. I was like, damn. I mean, also, all the fish, if you read any packs of the label, like lunch meat and all that stuff, all of them will say modified something, modified this, modified that. Those animals, those turkeys and everything else, are getting fed modified food, modified corn feed, and so any animal that's getting fed modified food, like fish, if it is not wild caught, make sure when you buy fish it says wild caught. Make sure when you buy tuna it says wild caught, because if not, they're being fed genetically modified feed, modified corn, etc. Yeah, I mean, anything like maltodextrin, you can read on the back of your packages. Maltodextrin is like corn starch. Anything that says corn starch, or it'll say modified food starch or something like that on the back, you got to start reading the labels, because it'll just surprise you how much stuff. What's surprising really is MSG as well. I mean, MSG, once you start reading labels, is like in everything. And anytime something says enzymes, just a blanket statement of enzymes, stay the hell away from that as well. Because that can be MSG, and most likely is. And aspartame is in stuff that you would never expect it to be. Basically, anything that's sweet is going to either have high fructose corn syrup or aspartame in it. Two things you are the big no-nos, you know, part of the weaponization of food. And anything that is not sweet is also going to have a weapon in it, as MSG is pretty much in all dry foods, all soups, all, you know, beef jerky and flavored chips and everything. Spices and seasonings are pretty much, you know, if they don't have MSG, they don't, well, goodness, we wouldn't want that. Of course, people think that MSG is just something that the Asians do or whatever, which is not true. In fact, what the Asians originally used with MSG was a natural derivative of it. I mean, what we have is a weaponized synthetic version of this thing, and it's not in any way safe. Like, well, nothing happened to the Asians. Well, they weren't eating what we're eating. Okay, so what do we cover? Some of those stuff. A lot of the fruits and vegetables, can't think of anything offhand. I know that there's a lot more stuff. That'll give you a idea of some of the things that you need to avoid. And, of course, always drink spring water. I mean, it's so crucial that we all start drinking spring water and not drinking water, which costs the same, or distilled water or anything else. Get spring water and read the labels. Does it say it's actually from a spring? And then, or if you could find something that says it's been through a reverse osmosis process, that's decent. But a lot of times it'll say, it's been a reverse osmosis process or distillation. It's like most of them will like give the one or the other. Either we do the expensive thing or we just boil it. We don't even know. We don't keep track of that stuff. But anyway, it's important because fluoride is just what we know about the fluoride that we drink. I mean, what the papers have been done on what they publicly say is in our water. Well, I guess they publicly say that the hexacyclic fluorides, but they don't advertise it. But if you call up your water district and you go, do we add regular sodium or calcium fluoride, or do we add the there's a lot of different names for this: silicofluoric acid, hexafluorosilic acid, fluorosilic acid. Silicofluorides is a general term, but anyway, they will be like, we add the stuff that you've never heard anything about. Okay, that's a quick rant. I'll take a break, and then, well, you know what I'm going to do instead of taking a break? I'm going to play a clip from a lady named Bryce Taylor. Bryce, you may remember in the interview we just did with Zeph Daniel, who was a survivor of satanic ritual abuse and generational mind control and a number of things. But I'd heard him mention before that this Bryce Taylor, he was able to corroborate all that she said because of the different things that she said around the L.A., things that she mentioned around the L.A. scene of the Brotherhood here, I believe she refers to them as. So there is at least one corroborating factor to her story. I got about a 20-minute clip here that I'd like to play because it's just interesting. It just goes to show you how serious this may be if you're not into the fold, to use a term, but not in the same way that she does. In the fold, I mean as somebody who is aware of what's going on in this regard. So let me play this real quick, and we'll take a break on the other end, and I'll see you in just a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Dean. I really appreciate the opportunity for being here today. And for me, today is quite a celebration in my recovery in ways that you'll be able to understand when I get a little bit further into my talk. But today is the day that I'm going to overcome my fear of naming the names of my affluent and oftentimes publicly known famous people that were part of my abuse system. The reason I'm doing that is in order to stand and speak for others, other survivors who have not yet had the chance of recovering to the level that I've been so fortunate to be supported to recover to. And so today when I speak the names, I'm speaking the names for all of us, for all of this, so that we can begin to have this system exposed and stopped, so that these crimes that are occurring against children all over the world can come to an end. I'd like to also thank Ted Gunderson, who has been my personal support and security system for a lot of years. In 1985, when I first had my accident and started waking up to the reality of what I had been involved with, Ted started coming forward and advising me with ways to stay safe and to stay alive, and his technique worked, so thank you. And I'd also like to thank my children, who are still under mind control and are still as yet under control with their perpetrators. I would like to thank them for being born into my life so that I would have a reason to continue living against all odds and against the horror that I woke up to, that I didn't believe that I would be able to live through. And if it wasn't for my children, I probably would not have had the motivation or the courage to continue the battle that I had to face. It's really frustrating for me as I stand before you to try to figure out how I could say something that is so important and is so important for so many people's lives, for me to be able to get it all organized and to say it in a way that you could understand. It has been a real challenge for me, and so I hope that you'll just be patient and open your minds and your hearts to the possibility that there are children all over the world who have been abused in the similar ways that I'm going to share with you my experience today, so that we can begin as a nation to put an end to what has been covered up for so many, many years. As Ted explained about the ritual abuse, I also am an intergenerational satanic ritual abuse and government mind control survivor. And satanic ritual was a way that my controllers were able to control me, as using the satanic blood ritual as a trauma base. It's a conditioning in order to bring about the mind control, the levels of mind control, and the multiple personality disorder that was the result of being tortured for so many different years and since I was a very small child. In order to stay alive, once I started remembering, I wrote a book, and my book is back on the table, but I'd like to explain that it was novelized not in an effort to cover up the story further, but it was novelized in an attempt to keep me alive. At that time, it was very dangerous, and I found myself often running from state to state and from people to people, trying to find a safe place to recover and to figure out what had happened. And I guess the easiest way to begin my story is to begin when I began waking up. In 1985, I had a head-on collision where my head smashed through the windshield of the car. And for the first time in my life, I had access to both sides of my brain. And there really wasn't anyone in 1985 that really understood much about ritual abuse or the memories that I started having. And so I entered school to work on my master's degree in clinical psychology, thinking that I might be able to understand what was going on with my own mind. But when my memories and flashbacks became so intrusive that I could no longer think without being constantly bombarded by visual and sensory images, much like the Vietnam veterans, I quit school and went into therapy full-time. I was in therapy every day for about 6 years on a daily basis, where I started documenting the horror of the rituals that I attended as a child, was taken to, and of all the child abuse that led to my further sophisticated programming, and then on into the government mind control, where I was used in the intelligence community with the elite families and with people such as my owner, who was Bob Hope. I did it. And thank you. And Henry Kissinger, who was responsible for programming me with what he called government mind files, where I was used as a human computer, and he took me with him to different places to do foreign policy and meetings, where he would access my mind behind the scenes in order to work with the people that he was working with the Rockefellers and some of the other people that I was involved with in bringing in the New World Order. The agenda that Henry Kissinger was the mastermind of is very, very sophisticated and involves a lot of people. It involves presidents, it involves governors, it involves foreign leaders. And in my experience, and because Henry decided that for whatever reason, I was the one selected to be used as this human tape recorder that he sent around the world in order to target certain individuals that they wanted to own or control or use and manipulate through sexual encounter, and then by either passing messages to these people or retrieving messages. He also used me to send messages back and forth between George Bush and a lot of other different world leaders who were very instrumental and still are in bringing out the New World Order. Back to my therapy and all of that, as I began coming up with these memories and talking about it in my therapy with my therapist, and they just kept looking at me like I was crazy because they didn't understand what all this ritual abuse was and why I was talking about being flown at night in helicopters where there were no lights on, and where I was flown into tops of buildings in Beverly Hills and in Las Vegas and in Hollywood and all over, and they didn't understand. But my one therapist finally realized that there was something to what I was saying when she looked out the window and there were men in suits in the car waiting at my therapy session. She lived in a residential neighborhood, so it was a little out of order for that to be happening. So I realized then, and she did too, that I was in danger. And given all the names that I was remembering, she said, I think we need to get you out of town and into hiding for a while. So I left my home, my husband, my children, and everything that I had ever known, and went to an island where she found me a safe place to live. That's a whole other story in itself. But while I was on the island, I realized, because I wasn't around the people that I was programmed to in my family, I realized that I had been used as a sex slave with Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon and all of these different presidents. And I didn't understand. I thought, as my programming dictated, I thought that I was absolutely crazy. There is no way this happened. You know, I'm just this housewife and this is absolutely crazy. So as my programming dictated, I had migraine headaches when I began to remember. I had suicidal feelings. I wanted to cut and burn myself. I had to fight a lot of the programming that was there and very carefully set into place that guaranteed national security that I would never be able to remember and tell. But through my, what I call is my divine intervention and my spiritual connection, I was led all over the place to people and places that would help me so that I would recover in order to stand before you and to report what it was that I saw and what I heard and what I know. And what I do know is that children are being used as huge financial resources and tortured and abused in horrendous ways in order to fund a lot of the covert operations that I believe and know now are the mind control operations and a lot of the other government products and projects that have been kept in still and classified documentation. The children that were abused in many ways, like I was, and I feel like JonBenet Ramsey was one such little child who may have had a very similar history, were, if I would explain to you that from the time I was born, that my father and others tortured me over and over with sexual abuse, satanic ritual abuse, near drowning and suffocations, terror harassments where I was absolutely terrified about things that I was told under when I was in a drug state were going to happen to myself and my family. Electroshock in the earlier years when I was a child, they used cattle prods, and as I grew older they used stun guns on me. Food and sleep deprivation, and then as I grew older, and evidently I was able to, for whatever reason, master the levels of abuse that I had gone through. and was able to do what they wanted to. I was taken to military bases, I was taken to Disneyland, and I was taken to NASA, and I was put into a lot of the equipment that they use on astronauts and that they have there that's very sophisticated brainwave mind control programming technology that is in use, that also uses drugs, bright light, sound, and electrodes, and all kinds of very, very sophisticated frequency medicine. I was taken to Edwards Air Force Base. I was taken to Point Magoo Naval Weapons Center, 29 Palms in California, and a lot of different military installations around the country. Henry Kissinger took me into different agencies in D.C. and asked me to use my photographic memory, which he had programmed in, to document documents that he wanted to have in my mind so that if he ever needed to pull up information, he could do that. And I was also used with as an information gatherer between a lot of the members of this elite, the global elitists that feel that, and I listened in between Kissinger and Rockefeller's, they talked about the fact that 98% of the world population really doesn't think and doesn't deserve to be alive, and that they aren't genetically elite like they are and their progeny, and they really wanted to reduce the population of the planet so that it would be left in a more pristine way for their progeny. Adolf Hitler and George Bush both talked about the New World Order. And from what I now understand, the concentration camps in Nazi Germany were actually used for mind control experimentation. And Mark Phillips, who was a person that I knew several years ago, actually shared with me, and it's documented in Linda Hunt's book, Project Paperclip, that Mark Phillips actually was instrumental and was a witness in flying these Nazi doctors to our country and installing them into the major universities. They were given political immunity as they continued to do the experimentation on the mind. And a lot of survivors that I talk with from all over the world and that write me letters are naming all of these different people and are naming the different places that they were taken into hospitals, universities, military bases in order to further their programming. The other thing I would like that I think is really, really important to explain is that people that have been satanically, ritualistically abused are controlled and are actually the plan of control was to manipulate people through not only through the trauma which causes the multiple personality and dissociation, but also the guilt. And I don't know that I could really explain to you, but I think that those of you that are parents might understand the absolute terror and horror of waking up, as I did, to realize that not only had my parents done this horrific abuse to me, but that I had also passed this down to my children in a programmed state that I was totally and completely unaware of. And I think that anyone that ever says that they've been programmed or ritually abused and has not, and says that they did not abuse their own children or pass this down, are really not truly survivors of this abuse, because that is the way that they keep people totally and completely under control. My children are now, my eldest son is 12. My daughter also was used and was programmed from birth, actually. She was taken out of my arms in the hospital, and an intelligence officer stuffed a wadded tissue down her throat and brought her near death immediately after her birth in order to dissociate her and to dissociate me and terrify me to not tell. Kelly is now in a group home, and she is totally and completely a mess. And I believe that there are children all over the world who are suffering from this and are stuffed away in mental hospitals or prisons or whatever and not believed. And so in this way, the plan continues to proliferate, and these children end up not getting the help that they deserve because of the media cover-up, because this is all such a large political agenda with such, as you can see, it's got wide backing. It's got a lot of years of loyalty to it, and a lot of people and a lot of technology. But I believe that they were short-sighted as far as not understanding that even their technology that was guaranteed that I could never remember by national security agenda was that they were very short-sighted in their own spirituality to know that my innate spirituality would be what would lead me out of this and into the truth of what happened. And so that's where I believe that as we're all able to connect more spiritually, to be discerning and to not just take what people say or what you read in the newspaper, like with Mr. Harris, to not just believe what you read, but to question it, and to stop watching all of this television that is just giving you the propaganda lies that they want you to believe, but there is a way out of it, and that's by learning to critically analyze, think on our own, and trust ourselves to know that we know the truth. I think it's really important, and I'd like to thank Barbara Marciniak and Sylvia Gillott for being there for people like myself who are able to really support people in the truth of what happened and to continue to get this information out and to have an open mind about what's happened so that we can begin to bring an end to this.
This is Revere Radio Network, Tampa.
Welcome to the real world.
Okay, we are back. This show is called Nowhere to Run on the Revere Radio Network. You can get the show Nowhere to Run, the archives in different places. We're on iTunes. You can also go to various podcasting feeds or across the internet. You can just type Nowhere to Run and my name, Chris White, or Nowhere to Run podcast or something into the search engine. I'm sure you'll find it. Nowhere to Run.podomatic.com is kind of the home podcast site where I usually post the show notes and stuff, and I think that comes through in the feeds as well. You can email me at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at conspiracyclose.com. That is my company, conspiracyclose.com. It's a pretty secure server and everything, so you can tell me your deep, dark secrets if you want to, or just send me your general hate mail and that kind of thing. Again, that is Chris at conspiracyclose.com. And you can support this show by your prayers. I very much need them and encourage you to pray for me in any way that you feel necessary, but certainly in order to not give out disinformation in this show, or misinformation, as it were, because this whole conspiracy realm is so awash in pitfalls and bear traps just waiting to spring on somebody to make them both discredit them and give them, to lead them on the wrong track and stuff. It's just a very volatile data field. And so everybody should be careful of that, and I just hope that we don't do that here. And so I ask for your prayers in that regard and any other regard that you can think of that I might need, and I appreciate it. I can tell very much so that you do pray for me. And if there is, that is the reason this show has done anything or any kind of quality information, it is because of that directly. I am absolutely sure of it. Okay, let's get into the last segment here. I just wanted to let you know, I've been doing, you know, we've done the interview here with Russ Dizdar, who I still consider that probably one of my favorite interviews that we've done here, and you can find that in the archives with Russ Dizdar. And Russ provides, like, a course to do basically what he does. And I purchased this course from him, and it was the best thing I've done. I've been going through the different courses here lately. I've done, I think I'm on the sixth course right now, or not the sixth course, but the sixth session in the first course. And it's amazing. It's like this really intense Bible study thing, I guess, but it's, you know, in dealing with this, it's called Confronting the Powers. And it's just teaching everything from this kind of, that kind of level that he's at. And it's also good because there's no way I would have, like, you know, agreed to some kind of intense Bible study, I don't think, unless it was from somebody that I really, really respected in that regard. And also, it costs money, so it kind of has that extra boost of, well, hey, I paid money for this, so you're, like, super concentrating on it, you know. But it is just makes you grow in leaps and bounds, and then I highly recommend it to anyone. He's got a ton of free material out there, and shatterthedarkness.net, and he's got and subscribe to his email newsletter. It's very, very, very good newsletter to get, and he, you know, sends out his podcast every whatever it is, week or whatever. And just a very I think he's like the leading person in this whole field of true Christians and spiritual warfare in these last days. I think that he's just a shining light in the darkness, and I really encourage people to check him out and to get one of those courses, because it's really, really, really just making me grow in my spirituality in leaps and bounds. It's kind of like going to seminary or something, you know. It's like just that much of a crash course and all this stuff, and I really, really like it, so I just thought I'd mention that. Also, I wanted to quickly defend, if I could, I don't know, and the man needs not my defense, but we just got it talking a little bit about it in the last interview I did, but Alex Jones, and I just think he's just such a genius. You know, I understand people's problems with him, and I understand that there's a lot of animosity, but it's like as a patriot kind of movement, we've all kind of just thought we were cooler, that we were the ones that came up with all this information, and we were the ones that, you know, we didn't need him. I didn't get my information from him. I got it from somewhere else. And, you know, that's true. I mean, I didn't really either. And but when I got to Alex Jones, it really just made it all connect and make sense. I mean, he is definitely, I mean, something very, very special. And, you know, regardless of what you do or, you know, don't like about his style, I mean, it's 100 miles an hour with him. I mean, it's just really, really quality stuff. And I encourage people to pray for Alex Jones as well as for Ron Paul. Those two men I pray for, basically I pray for them for the same reasons and the same thing, so I kind of group them together generally. But they both, I encourage us to pray for them for their message to be heard, for God to just open doors that their message be heard for just many, many more people than already have heard him. So that, and it would be for God's glory. I mean, I think that it's so important that happens. As well, I pray for God to frustrate the power of their enemies and to protect them from evil and to protect their families from evil, but also to just completely frustrate their enemies and their plans for them. I pray that God also kind of keeps tabs on their mouths, that their words might not be used against them and things of that nature, but certainly for their protection and things like that. I think they both need all the prayers that we can get, and I think it's a good way to contribute to Ron Paul's campaign as well. And certainly Alex Jones gives many people like me such boldness, and I think that's the reason they hate him so much, because, you know, every time I would be like, well, you know, I shouldn't do that, they'd be out to get me and everything, I think, well, here's this guy who is laying it all on the line, you know, and it's just, and showing every day how important this all is, and has, you know, has laid it all on the line, laid his life on the line, and continues to do so every day, and has realized and is showing people that you know, being bold is the only way to win. If we don't be bold, then we will lose. And You know, I think that he gives me great encouragement to do what I do. And so I just thought I'd share that with you. Also, Ron Paul is just an amazing thing. I really think, again, that what is going to happen with that is just going to shake the foundations of this system that they've built up, and it's going to cause such a great awakening to their system and how corrupt it is. And there is just, I mean, around here in Nashville, I mean, it's like hit hometown, you know. I mean, people are wearing Ron Paul shirts, and like this grassroots movement is really working. And I encourage everybody to just get involved. And he's got like this just grassroots fan base that is just going to shake everything to its core. And everybody's going to realize that we've been being lied to and that we're being frauded out of our votes and everything. It's going to cause a serious amount of trouble for them, and it's just amazing to see them short circuit on TV, because anything, they could have handled anything except for Ron Paul. I mean, a guy that potentially, you know, they haven't completely locked down the system yet, but they have pretty much locked it down, unless somebody like Ron Paul came away. He's like the one thing that could really mess them up. And again, I don't really understand. I mean, I think that he can win if the voting machines weren't rigged and all that stuff. I still think he can win. I mean, if God wants to do whatever he wants to do, he can do it. But I think also, since they don't have the voting machines rigged in every city and whatnot, you know, there's going to be a very inconsistency where Ron Paul's just going to win by a massive amount in one the non-rigged states, and all the rigged states, he's not even going to show up on the polls. And so there's going to be very huge inconsistencies in the amount of people that exit polls, and the Ron Paul wins everything. There's going to be a massive problem that they're going to have to deal with in that, unless they don't nip it in the bud in the primaries, which I'm sure that they will attempt to do. But again, God frustrating these enemies and their powers and their plans against him is something that we should definitely pray for. And again, something I'm learning with the course and Russ Dizdar is teaching is that we need to begin to understand, of course, that there is a spiritual warfare going on, and that it's growing, and to pray against these powers. And I mean, we have the authority to do that. We just haven't claimed our authority, and that's one way we do it. I mean, it does no good to the whole body of evil just to pray in general, oh God, save the world. But to pray specifically against evil of this, in a specific person, and continue to pray and focus and target that person in prayer, is extremely effective, because it's our right to do that and to pray in the name and authority of Jesus Christ. It's extremely effective, and it's all the more reason to. Once you start to get a feel for that, you won't go back. I mean, it is truly a gift. So anyway, I'm going to play a clip for you here that I really enjoy. This is from the Ancient of Days conference, which has just been a really big light on a lot of the stuff that we talk about here, and some of the people we've interviewed, a lot of people on this panel, in this panel discussion, including Patrick Heron and Joe Jordan, and other people like Mike Heiser and Stan Deo, who we'd like to have here, and other people, Jim Wilhelmson. Really, the kind of heavy hitters in this area, and Guy Malone, who has organized this conference. But this is a really interesting panel discussion. You were able to get it on Google Video, and I encourage everybody to do that. If you type in Ancient of Days, all one word, it will come up, I believe, on Google Video. But here's a really interesting excerpt from this video. I encourage you to stay tuned for it. It's about, I think we got about 20 minutes left or something like that. You can email me. My email is chris@conspiracyclothes.com. That is chris@conspiracyclothes.com. That's my company, conspiracyclothes.com. Okay, thanks to everybody. You are listening to Nowhere to Run on the Revere Radio Network. Remember, we are in the last days. We should start acting like it. Power to the people, and all glory be to God. Later.
I just feel, I'm over that now, but I felt getting up to the point of this conference that there were certain things that if I died before I told anyone, that it would be a great loss to the database of knowledge. And these things are those products. Now, I'm not by myself. There are others who are studying and bringing this stuff forward, as I explained in the lecture yesterday, across the planet. And our objective is pretty much altruistic. We're obviously, we get the kudos for, you know, being bright lads on the block and stuff, but we're not going out there to make a fortune and be the new Henry Ford or that kind of rubbish. We are seeing
that we are all custodians of what the Lord has put here for us. Mm-hmm. And to be good custodians means to share and build rather than accumulate to oneself. So this is, I'm hoping that this will happen.
Question for Stan. While working in your black budget government projects, did you have any exposure to the practice of remote viewing?
Well, actually,
remote viewing is defined biblically when Elijah, they come back and report. It's as if he's been in our office. You remember that passage, guys? Yeah. Someone made that allusion a couple years ago. Kings, thanks.
Well, it wasn't called remote viewing at the time, and I'm not sure that what I went through was the same. However, when I look at it, it was closely allied. I went through all this last night for a TV crew. It was here filming for Sci-Fi or something like that, one of the TV channels. Anyway, at the Air Force Academy, when I was a cadet there, one afternoon that started, we came out of lunch, my squadron, 22nd Squadron, and a few of us were pulled aside and taken in to a room about, oh, probably twice the size of this room. And had a screen up at this end and a kind of a silvery, egg-shaped slide projector sitting back there where the camera is here. And the instructor told us all to sit down, relax, and this is unusual in a military environment like that. You know, he said at ease and, kick back a bit. And it was hot outside, and it was just after lunch, and so we thought, whatever he says, man, let's relax. And so we were sitting there, and he said, now, we're going to try an experiment on you today, and we want you to look at this black dot up here on the screen. And when we tell you, we want you to close your eyes and keep them closed until we say open and focus. And then you'll open your eyes, and you'll focus on that black dot, and you will not blink until we tell you. It won't be long, but you just do what we tell you. So we all kind of thought, well, whatever you say, Jack. And he dimmed the lights, and the instructor then said, okay, close your eyes, get ready, open, focus, hold. And as we did that, there was a sound from that projector that kind of went like that. And it didn't last but a second or two, and it was over. We thought, well, that was fun. All we could see on the screen was something like something out of focus, like clouds moving very rapidly, you know, static basically, but it wasn't quite as fine as you'd see in white noise. And the instructor said, okay, now you've just read a book at 200 pages a second. Yeah. And we did. We laughed just like you're doing. And he says, okay, I'll prove it to you. Red. Everybody said, okay, red. Girl. Girl, that sounded like a good idea. Street light. And with that, the guy behind me stretched. He was a tall, skinny guy. He jumps up and he says, sir, I see it. And we all know this guy. I mean, he's just one of the guys. And so he's shaking his hand and he's pointing like this in the air. And we, he said, all right, tell me what you see. He said, I see page 13. Read it to me. And he read page 13 about a girl with a red scarf standing in a street light next to a train station at night in the city, et cetera, et cetera. And he read it word for word. Instructor popped it up on the screen and says, here's what he just saw. You all have this in the rest of the book in your mind. Now, he was able to see it more rapidly than you, that portion. But after you've dream-slept, you'll pick it up. All right. Well, that's not remote viewing, but then after that, for days, we would get up in the morning and have black circles under our eyes. We would be dream assimilating whatever they'd pumped in. And believe me, I never saw any pages floating ever. But I did see in the years to come the inside of flying saucers, how a solar system works, Einstein's equations solved in 3D color movies in my mind when I'm waking up in the morning. In fact, anything that I went to bed thinking about, I need to know how that works, I would see it in a movie. Now, time passed. I left the academy. They put us under hypnosis there at the academy on a regular basis. And well, me, anyway. I don't know about everybody else, but there were a few hundred of us they were testing. And I forgot about it. And when I got recruited by Teller's people and went down to Australia, I was in a meeting with the chief superintendent, like the grand honcho of the Aeronautical Research Lab at Fisherman's Bend in Melbourne. And I was meeting with Dr. Keeblabs, him, and three of his staff, atmospheric physicists and things, talking about my work on flying saucers. And one of them got real curious, and he said, look, you went to the academy, yeah, okay. Listen, you know, the training you got, did you realize that you were tying into a database? And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he says, you know, the things you can see in your mind. And I said, well, no, I didn't. What are you talking about? And he said, well, they were training you guys. We heard about the test. We just are really happy to meet one of you guys in person that's alive. And I thought, you know, I thought, well, that's an unusual way to say it. Yeah. What do you mean? And he said, well, we heard that a lot of you died or suicided. And I said, uh-huh, well, a few did. I didn't realize it was because of that, but... All right, what were we doing? And he said, they were tuning your mind like a radio so that you could think on a subject and while the rest of the world's asleep over the other side of the planet, and you could get into their minds without seeing the individual, but there was a database of common knowledge that you were pulling on. And I kind of laughed because I thought they were having a lend of me. And no, they were serious and said, no, we're quite glad to meet you. And that's what was happening. They've tuned your mind like a radio. And so I suppose, in essence, that's remote viewing, and perhaps like some of these mystics talk about where you get in a state and you can, you know, access the record of information around the planet. I don't know, but
wow.
I never was able to focus it and say, you know, where is this thing hidden or where is that secret base or that kind of junk. So,
hey, Bill, would you consider remote viewing as a science, underline, or should it be considered a form of divination and thus a black art?
Well, I think it's obviously, I would say it's a black art or black science. You know,
or imitation of what?
Or an imitation, yes. But interestingly enough, to just underscore what Stan was talking about, my wife and I were approached, because see, we got on Nixon's enemies list. And in the 70s, because we were part of various pagan networks and, you know, neo-pagans and like ecology groups, because we were witches.
Long-haired hippies.
Yeah, we were long-haired hippie weirdos, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, and so somehow or other, someone got our name at the NSA, and they came to us and said, well, listen, we'll take care of you for the rest of your lives if you just come and let us work with you and develop and fine-tune this. And interestingly enough, we didn't pray about things in those days. We just consulted the spirit guides. And the spirit guides said, no, don't get involved in this. This is wickedness. Now, that's hardly an endorsement one way or the other, because obviously that was demons talking. But I think personally, remote viewing is demonic. I think it's been classified and covered with a scientific patina. But I think it is demonic, unless, of course, it's being done by a prophet of the true and living Yahweh. And then it's just prophecy or a word of knowledge or something like that. But so that's my take.
Can Norm add just a second?
Oh, sure.
Very quick, Norm. I agree with what Bill is saying, because what I forgot to tell you was I've not been able to do that since the time that I was saved in Australia and a church prayed over me. They looked at my eyes and they said, you've been hypnotized and been, you know, exposed to this, and we're going to cleanse you of this. And once they laid hands on me and anointed me and prayed, it never happened to me again. So I don't think it's a good thing.
I had a few unnatural Sith abilities that went away when I got saved myself.
Remote viewing is used, I think it originated and is used primarily in the military. And one of the things that it's used for is to try and determine what the enemy is doing so it can be preempted. That's one of the that was one of the original reasons why it was developed. And when you go to 1 Samuel chapter 28, Saul is going up against the Philistines. And Samuel, the prophet, had died. And so he couldn't go to Samuel to find out if he should go up and if he was going to win the war and so on and so forth. So he went to a medium, the scripture says, who had a familiar spirit. And I believe, and I did a teaching on this years ago when remote viewing first came out around the, really came out in the open around the Hale Bopp incident, because there were people who were remote viewing Hale Bopp. and that there was a spacecraft following it called the Kingdom of Heaven, and that ties back into the Heaven's Gate UFO cult. And so the remote viewing is just a very sophisticated form of the use and the flow of a familiar spirit. That's really all that it is. And there's an incident, if you go to 1 Samuel chapter 28 and read it, that's exactly the same basic thing, and it happened with a military aspect of things. Went to a medium to find out, you know, what was going to happen in the war.
Okay, Patrick Heron suggests that the pagan goddesses such as Athena, Ishtar, Venus, may be representations of real female fallen angels. Bill Sneblin talked about satanic rites involving sexual intercourse with female fallen angels. And it's underlined, question for Mike Heiser, are there female sons of God or daughters of God, or are experiences with female angels more likely a deception or illusion? Yeah, that was mine. Thanks. No, I'm kidding.
The short answer is, yeah, I don't have any problem with. I use the phrase divine beings because that sort of encompasses everything. I don't have any problem with them taking physical female form. It's true that you don't get. There's one possible exception, but it's very vague, and so I don't think it really contributes to the discussion. There's really no evidence in the Hebrew Bible for an angel or an Elohim, lesser Elohim, appearing in female form. That doesn't happen. They're always masculine. But that said, it's also clear, I think, both within the canon and outside the canon, that these entities can take various forms, possibly any form they wish, if you look at what Enoch says. And so to say, well, they can take every form except the female is just kind of, you know, odd. And you do get, you know, various reports through the Middle Ages. Augustine, you know, this is Augustine's, of course, 5th century. They had long drawn out theological debates on, okay, when you have sex with a female demon, is that a violation of the scriptural command against bestiality because that's not human? I mean, they had these long drawn out theological discussions. Okay, well, right, you know, so this is something very ancient that important figures in church history, I mean, you go back and read Augustine and Aquinas, and they're having these discussions. So I think it would be kind of absurd to say that this can't be.
Okay.
Just quick.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, guys.
No, go ahead. You're closer.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that there are female angels mentioned. Is it in Zephaniah?
That's the one possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talks by about name. Female angels. And also, Isaiah speaks of somebody called a, quote, Queen of Heaven, end of quote, and the Lady of Nations. And then in the book of Revelation, it talks about the whore of Babylon. Now, of course, this could have a dual or maybe triple prophetic meaning insofar as the whore of Babylon would be a metaphor for pagan religion stemming from Babylon all the way down through the Catholic Church. Deceptive religion, you know. But there's a huge Marian cult thing going on all over the place. This entity, this beautiful-looking woman, is appearing all from the Our Lady of Guadalupe to the Queen of Heaven in Fatima, Knock in Ireland, all over the place. And I used to say before, because, you know, Mary was a wonderful woman. She's the mother of Jesus Christ. She had four sons and at least three daughters. But there's a house in Ephesus in Turkey, which is a tourist attraction. It says this is where Mary died, and people go to it, which is probably Mary, and this probably would be right, because not far off the coast of Ephesus right there is Patmos, and I think Jesus asked John to take care of his mother when he was hanging on the cross, and they all legged it out of there because they knew what was coming down in 70 AD, because he told them. So there are then, with the Greek pantheon of gods, along with Apollyon, i.e. Apollo, the beast from the abyss. And remember, this another phrase I didn't get to last night, where it's in three different places up around, I think it's Revelation at 17, it says, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and shall come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. Again, I read that for years, didn't understand what it meant. But now, the beast which you saw once was when, in the days prior to the flood of Noah, when he, along with the rest of his mates, were knocking around causing destruction back then. Now is not, because he's locked up in Tartarus, or the abyss, and will come up again out of the abyss and go to his destruction. Which doesn't mean he's going to go and be destroyed. He is going to cause destruction. And if you go back to the original pantheon of Greek gods, along with Mars, Saturn, Pluto, Neptune, Jupiter, Zeus, etc., you have several female ones there too, i.e. Athena, Artemis, Demeter, Hera. And one of the seven wonders of the world is also in Ephesus there, which was the temple of Artemis. I'm not sure if she's Athena or they're different. Of course, Athens is named after Athena. And that was one of the seven wonders of the world. I think that might tie in with the Pleiades and the seven planets with the seven angels. There's a lot of work to be done on that stuff there. So there are. And this, I think, is you've Artemis, possibly who's Athena, possibly who's Ashtaroth, Ashtart, Semiramis of Babylon, who could be the whore of Babylon, i.e. the Queen of Heaven, i.e. the Lady of Nations, i.e. Mary, the Mother of God. And I think that she's going to play a big part in the coming of deception in the Apocalypse, along with Apollo, the guy who is in the stead of Christ, this false prophet, out of the sea also, it says, he comes out of the sea. And it talks about the Rephaim being under the sea, which were the post-flood guys. And this whore of Babylon, who fornicated with the kings of the earth. Well, who are the kings of the earth? If the princes of this world had known about the mystery, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. And talking about seed too. I mean, he said to the guys, ye are of your father, the devil. That's seed, you know, and princes of this world. So, yeah. I forgot what the question was.
Let's hand off the mic. Yeah. Let's move on.
I just wanted to ask Michael one quick question, because I think it's an important one to ask. I agree with what everybody's been saying. I just wonder one thing. In your experience and understanding of the scriptures, is there a place for a good female angel? In other words, obviously there is not an appearance that I know of a good female angel in the Old Testament, but do you think if someone had a female angelic visitation, that maybe even what was said was more or less scriptural, would that necessarily be outruled by the scriptures or what?
And would it be a sin if I married her?
The second part,
the
yes. No, I believe in guardian angels, and I think they can take female form, so I don't have any problem with that. I don't know why. We just seem to have this vacuum. I mean, the Hebrew word for angel, the Hebrew word for spirit, don't occur in that Zephaniah passage, which is why people have just kind of hemmed and hawed over it. It's kind of incidental, because you do have guardian angels. At least I think that's what Matthew's talking about. And I take seriously guardian angel reports. You do have, obviously, deities and pagan pantheons that take female form. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's a good question. I've never actually been asked that question, but I think I'd put it in the guardian angel category.
Okay. All right, I'll make this quick, but I got to put the lid on this here. Look, I studied with a couple of really neat rabbis a few years ago, and we discussed things like this, and they pointed out to me a very obvious fact. The Orthodox historic Jewish community is a male-dominated society. If it was strong, it was male. You could not have a strong female, a dominant female. It just didn't work. In fact, they were so pedantic about this, as Michael will verify. When they made their alphabet, there were the masculine letters, and the female letters weren't even written until modern times, where they put them underneath the line in little tiny subscripts because they didn't rate. They were female. So I think that there were probably female angels or fallen ones, and they probably just didn't report it because it didn't fit with their masculine view.
And I have my wife's permission to say so.
Yes. But having said that, and in closing, the New Testament, Jesus said about the feminist movement there. I mean, he did recognize women for their value, but he was departing from the historic Jewish position. Was he not, Michael?
Yeah, I think the New Testament... This is one of my favorite bugaboos with the Gnostic crowd.
Okay.
I think the New Testament gets far less recognition for elevating just a general view of women.
Yeah.
You know, it's portrayed as though Gnosticism has the corner on the correct treatment of women. Well, I would challenge you to actually read the Gnostic texts.
Yeah.
I mean, there you can't, you know, you can't be saved unless you become a man. I mean, how's that a high view of women? I mean, give me a break. It just, but you read this in the literature, the Da Vinci Code, and the books that's based on, this idea that the evil, you know, Christian church, you know, just treading, you know, at every opportunity over women, and then the glorious enlightened Gnostics, that, you know, how wonderful they were. It's just, it's ridiculous. So I tend to agree that,